this is McLovin, and you're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on CITR.
Yeah, and we are Red Eye. Ow. And you're listening to CITR, the station from around the nation. Woo!
We have a little song for you called Stumble.
Everybody, welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. And the band we have in here today, they're awesome. Thanks for doing it, guys. You may have seen them outside the sub building today. What was it? Lunch at, what was it called?
Live at Lunch.
Live, at, like live at Lunch. Red Eye, thanks for being here. And the guy I want to ask right now, Gabe Davis.
Hello.
We're going to get to, if you have time, Gabe, we're going to do a little U.S. Open tennis talk a little later on.
You know I love it.
You know you love it. We had Bud Collins on last week.
No.
Yeah, I had
For
Bud.
For real?
I had Bud Collins on last week.
He's a king.
So.
I didn't hear much of him this year. Was he on?
He is no longer working.
Yeah,
for
I
NBC.
Never, that's sad because he was just a classic.
He's done enough, you know? He's done enough, but Gabe Davis with us, so we'll get to you. Gabe, a former member of the UBC Thunderbird men's tennis team. Were you on that team?
I was on that team.
Did it exist, sort of?
No, it was official. We made it to the Western Canadian Finals.
But you weren't a part of Calgary. You weren't a part of the CIAU, or you weren't a part of the...
No, we were.
There was a whole thing, though?
Yeah, the athletic department are a bunch of cheap bastards and didn't want to give us any funding. So, am I allowed to say that on this radio?
Well, it's said now. It's said now. And also, Gabe, if anybody has any scrap metal questions.
Yes. Birchcliff, berry candy, barley, anything you want to know.
Anything we want to know.
Bright and shiny, bring it on.
If you've got a piece of aluminum lying around, yeah, you want to know what to do with it.
I'll quote you out on the phone right now.
Gabe will tell you what to do. And Mike Redman, my problem with Mike Redman is, I don't know if you remember this, Mike, but because you improperly booked a Las Vegas hotel room about 3 years ago, I had to sleep on a floor for 3 nights. I don't know if you remember that.
I had to sleep someplace worse than that. In the party suite.
I think anybody who's been to Vegas has slept in worse places than that.
Awesome. Anyways, guys, I got to get on with the show.
You do it.
And we're going to hear back from you at just before 5 o'clock.
Okie doke.
Cool. Thanks, guys. All right, everybody. Welcome to Wieners Barbecue here on CITR. Lots to get into today. We're going to do a whole bunch of UBC stuff till about 5 o'clock. And then at 5 p.m., I don't know if you guys, well, you definitely know who this guy is, and if you don't, you should know. Jean Béliveau, one of the greatest hockey players who ever lived. You guys know Jean Béliveau?
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Jean Béliveau will be on the show at 5 o'clock.
In studio?
No, on the phone. Good try. That would have been cool.
That would have been cool.
We're going to, of course, go one of Gabe's favorite people in the world. BJ Bass will be with us, of course, to talk
in studio?
On the phone. Okay. On the phone. And then we're going to do a little BC Lions talk with Julio Caravatta. Tough game for the Lions. 32-14 losers to Montreal.
Brutal.
Too bad.
No, it was awful turnovers. That was hard.
Anyways, folks, starting off the show today, I caught up earlier with the head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds, Ted Govaya. UBC 1-1 on the season. They beat SFU here on campus 19-11 on Tuesday night. They took on the number 4 team in the country, the Manitoba Bisons, on Saturday right here on campus. Lost that one 21-12. This is a young UBC team, and they did take on the number 4 team in the country, Manitoba, and only lost by 9 points. So I asked head coach Ted Govaya if he was happy with the way his team played in the defeat.
Yeah, I'm happy with the way the guys played. You know, you're never happy after a loss, but, you know, certainly I think our guys played well.
And what have we learned about the UBC Thunderbird football team right now, coach? 1-1 on the season. You beat SFU 19-11 a week ago today, and then the 9-point loss to Manitoba on the weekend. What have we learned about our team so far?
Well, you know, I think at times we showed a lot of character on defense and, you know, really came up with some key stops in the third and fourth quarter that gave us a chance to win, which was really encouraging. And on the other side, we did improve offensively, but still an area that we need to continue to get better at.
And tell us about the play of your young quarterback so far. Doug Goldsby was able to throw for 277 yards against a very tough Manitoba defense on the weekend, but did have those two interceptions.
Yeah, he had two interceptions, and you know what? He's on track. I think he's going to be a great one, but it takes some time. So, you know, we have to be patient with him and continue to encourage him along.
Can you compare him to at all? Does he have similarities to, say, your last quarterback, Blake Smeltzer?
No, not at all. He's not similar to Blake at all. Blake was a thinker and got it done with his mind and did some great things over the years. And Doug's a little more gifted athletically. I mean, they both have good arms, but Blake had a lot of success with a quick release and be able to pick apart defenses. Doug, you know, is a younger version, and I think his legs are a little bit better.
Which one's more fun to coach, Coach?
Well, you know what? Both of them are a handful when they first start in the system, so it's... You know, both of them cause you to lose a few hairs when they're starting out and they're young. And, you know, they get old and they get pretty good and they graduate. So I love coaching both of them and, you know, it's good.
Chris Jinski, of course, huge game for you guys against SFU a week ago tonight. Real tough game, though, against Manitoba on Saturday. Only 13 carries for 38 yards.
Right. I mean, you know, you guys don't know this, but Chris was hurt, didn't practice all week after the SFU game and went back in and played. And, you need to practice in this game. If you want to be effective on game day, you got to practice all week. And so, you know, he's practicing this week, and I expect he'll bounce back this weekend.
Yeah, we'll get to that Alberta game in a moment here. Your third home game in a row, a strange way to start the season. The big guy you had, though, the big hype, Shea Emery, the transfer from Eastern Washington, 12 tackles for you guys right out of the chute. Is that going to be his role all season, playing on the defensive side of the ball? Are we going to move this guy around?
No. He's on defense, and I'm sure he's going to have his hands full doing that. So, no, we won't be moving around. Not yet.
Happy with his play. 12 tackles, that's a pretty good start.
Yeah, I'm happy with his play, but, you know, at the same time, he made some mistakes, too. And, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, can play football, but it's a different game up here, and he's got to learn it. So, you know, he did some great things, and as long as he continues to learn from his mistakes, he'll be a great player.
How good can Shea Emery be?
I think he can be a dominant player. I mean, I think he can be one of the best linebackers in the country, but he's got to keep working at it.
Okay, so a work in progress here.
The whole team's a work in progress, Daryl.
Well, let's keep things going with the work in progress. Taking on Alberta on the weekend, they lost to Regina 24-22 in their last game. What kind of contest are we looking at, the young UBC team taking on the Alberta Bears?
I think we're both similar football teams. You know, they're very athletic at the receiver position, and they've got a really good offensive line. And, you know, on defense, they've got some experienced players in the front seven and, you know, young but athletic in the back end, in the secondary. So, you know, I think we're pretty similar that way, and it's going to be a great test for us.
How do we fare up against these guys, though? I mean, you know, SFU, you should have won that game. Manitoba, you definitely had an uphill battle. How do UBC and Alberta match up? You know, who's favored in this one?
I don't know. I have no idea who's favored. You know, at the end of the day, like I said, I think it's a good matchup for both teams. And, you know, I think whoever comes out, you know, ready to play is going to win it.
Is this one of those games, though, Coach, that at the end of the season in the fight for the playoffs and positioning, these are the contests you're going to have to win, aren't they?
Absolutely. This is a crucial game for our football team, and we're playing a good one. So I'm excited. It's going to be a great game.
All right, everybody, that was my interview with the head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds, Ted Gavaya. UBC 1-1 will be taking on Alberta at Thunderbird Stadium on Saturday, so we will have the game here on CITR. With us right now, we're going to keep things going, is Don Wells, and he's done something quite fascinating. The book is called Flight of the Thunderbirds. It's on the history of athletics here at UBC, the history of athletics all throughout the school. And yes, Don, that was a pre-recorded interview with Ted Gavaya. I was not talking to you on the phone and playing the interview and doing the interview at the same time. I'm not that skilled.
I was temporarily amazed, I have to admit, Daryl.
Thank you, right? So with us right now, and this is a fascinating book. It is coming out on Thursday, I believe it's coming out, Don?
It's coming out Thursday. There's a small reception for a group of some of the university's most active alumni from among the athletic department, and then a full public release on Saturday at Alumni Day at the university. They'll be at the Flagpole Plaza. There's a barbecue just in advance of the 2 p.m. kickoff of the football game against Alberta, and that will be the full public release there.
Oh, great. Because, yes, Don, I haven't read the book because they couldn't give me an actual copy, I'm sorry to say. Steve Tuckwood of the UBC Athletic Department, I was actually in his office reading over almost like a rough note copy. That's sort of what I've been able to go through. It's a fascinating book. This book goes back to UBC athletics before UBC was even a university, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. I think that you can't examine the history of varsity sport in Vancouver without at least a mention of, it was called McGill University College in British Columbia, and that was the predecessor institution prior to UBC actually opening its doors in 1915. So there's an 8-year period in which advanced education, if you will, was delivered in this province by McGill University College of British Columbia. And they actually had teams. And in fact, the first record that we have found, that is the UBC's athletic department historian Fred Hume and I have found, is in 1909, in the spring of that year, McGill University College of BC had a rugby team, and it won the Miller Cup as city champion. So if you regard that as sort of a landmark point of origin, you know the first year for varsity sport for UBC, which I think, you know, you can argue it is, that makes the upcoming season 100 years. So by the time UBC opened in 1915, it actually had five teams in three sports, men's and women's. And so you might think at first glance, wow, they really got out of the gate quickly. But in fact, that sort of spirit of competition in athletics was kind of bred in the bone of the predecessor institution, McGill University College.
Yeah, you mentioned Fred Hume, and this was kind of a joint venture between the two of you, wasn't it?
It was. In fact, you know, we initially talked about doing it almost 10 years ago, Daryl. Fred was our football statistician and just a fantastic one at that. I think he made one mistake in the 10 years that I worked with him when he was my football statistician, when I worked in the athletic department. And I think he made one mistake in all those years. So he's fairly exacting in his research. He began to research for the department its hall of people to be inducted into its Sports Hall of Fame. So when the university first decided it wanted to have a Sports Hall of Fame, it got Fred and a government grant to look at history and try and identify some of the people from many years ago, including people from many years ago who had been outstanding athletes. And in the course of doing that, the byproduct of his research was he came up with an awful lot of really compelling stuff that I've tried to weave into something that's a good read and informative, and it also illustrates the role the athletic department played in the development of UBC.
Yeah, one of the things that caught me, and you mentioned the rugby team being the first team that UBC had, was, it's interesting you brought that up, 1920 Christmas Day,
yeah.
UBC beat Stanford by a score of 12-0, and Stanford at that time actually represented the United States in the Olympic Games, and UBC beat them 12-0, and I don't know if that was an actual newspaper or something. I assume it was. It was actually the front page of the Vancouver Sun. Was UBC beating Stanford 12-0 in rugby.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of the kind of story that Fred found out in the course of researching people. But he found events like this that are kind of meaningful almost in Vancouver sport history, because, of course, this is before professional sport, before TV. And so the Thunderbirds, well, they were called the Thunderbirds at the time, but UBC or varsity, it was called, was a big ticket. And so that was a good example of what might have been UBC's very first intercollegiate game. You know, they typically played club teams, so that might have been, I don't know if it was the first intercollegiate contest, but if it wasn't, it was one of. And not only that, it's, you know, pretty dramatic in that it's Stanford, it's at home, it's on Christmas Day, and in spite of the fact that it was Christmas Day, the reports are there's some, you know, approximately 1,000 students that made this trip down there to watch it, so this was an event that I guess was kind of a landmark event, and the Totem Yearbook of the day, so that would have been the 21 Totem Yearbook, the annual yearbook of the university, said that this was a game in which a university had won a game, won a spirit, and found herself, unquote. So, you know, apparently this was quite, quite something to be truly celebrated at UBC in the beginning of what appears to be a love affair with their teams to one extent or another.
Flight of the Thunderbirds is the book. I'm speaking with Don Wells, the author. Don, how long did it take you and Fred Hume to put this book together?
Fred probably spent the better part of a decade doing the research. Now, not necessarily on a full-time level, but he slowly and very meticulously uncovered it by going through every single piece of written material that largely is in the UBC Library Special Collections Division. And including the UBC, the Totem Yearbooks, the daily newspapers of the day. And that was probably a decade. Then another decade went by before I found the time to kind of dust it all off and pick up my files from my time at UBC, which gave us, you know, good insight to the last 20 years. And then from that period, it was about a year. So I probably started the writing and assembling, the book and some 300 photographs about a year ago.
Wow. So, Don, give us some other nuggets that, you know, I mentioned the rugby game versus Stanford. Give us some other nuggets that you guys discovered doing the research for this book.
Well, a lot of people will know the story about the women's basketball team winning the world championship. What was at the time, between 1928 and 1934, there was something called the Women's Olympic Games. And it was held in alternative years to Olympics. So there was games in 1930 in Prague, Czechoslovakia. UBC's women's basketball team represented Canada at the women's Olympic Games and won the gold medal. I believe the score was 18-10 on an outdoor cinder court, and they beat France 18-10 in front of about 10,000 people. and 5-week journey each way. So you can imagine the undertaking that this was. But they came home as world champions and were feted repeatedly at various civic and provincial receptions, really the toast of the province. 1956, Daryl, is a year that I would have to say is one in which you said...
Empire Games, correct?
Well, that was 50... Yes and no. Empire Games was stunning in that UBC defeated the British in the Vedder Canal to win the gold medal. But it did spark... You're correct. It sparked an incredible era in rowing. And 2 years later, two teams went to the Olympic Games to represent Canada, two UBC crews, a 4-man crew and an 8-man crew. And the 4-man crew came home with the gold medal, and the 8-man crew came home with the silver medal. So I think at that point in time, when UBC students, while being students, had not only gone to the Olympic Games, but won gold and silver medals, I think at that point, it was a pretty strong signal to all of Canada that this was a destination for people who were interested in studying at a great institution, but also to compete in sport at the very highest level, including to the point of being Olympic champion. So I think that was a significant event. And won medals again in 1960 and 64 in those Olympic Games.
Don, you've done all this research and you've studied the history of UBC, and you know, I believe the outdoor pool was made for the Empire Games, if I'm correct?
Correct.
And so they're getting the new hockey rink here. It's supposed to be done in a year, and it's going to be, you know, here for the 2010 Olympics. What kind of impact do you think that's going to have on the university, considering all the research you've done and you've seen what these new facilities have done for the university? What is this hockey rink going to be able to do?
I'm not sure specifically. I can't comment specifically what that rink will do. I haven't given it much thought, to be honest, but I honestly do believe that there is nowhere but up to go for this athletic department. I think it's very unique in Canada. They've won more national championships than any other university in Canada. They have more full-time coaches than any other university in Canada. They have larger scholarship endowments for athletes than any other university in Canada. They have more international relationships than any other university in Canada. They may have produced more Olympic athletes than any other university in Canada. And the breadth of the program is just stunning, if you think of it, that they have and continue to this day produce everything from Olympic champion rowers to major league pitchers. And that is an incredible spectrum of sport. And there's another one that's got that spectrum as well as that level of excellence at every point along the way. I think that UBC, you know, by raising all the scholarship money and declaring that, you know, it really wants to be a student-led, a student-driven organization, student-focused organization, that is wants to award scholarships and is engaged its alumni to raise it, there's nothing they can't do. There's nothing they can't do. I mean, if the future, you know, if history tells us anything about the future, there's nothing that can't be achieved at Point Grey.
Flight of the Thunderbirds is the book. I'm speaking with Don Wells, the author. It comes out Thursday. It will be available to the public on Saturday. Don, I will be reading it as soon as I can get my hands on a finished copy. Thanks for doing this. And, enjoy the week with your book coming out.
Thanks so much for having me on, Daryl.
Thanks, Don. Okay, that was Don Wells, as I mentioned. Flight of the Thunderbirds is the book. We're going to keep things going with the band Red Eye. When we're back, one of the greatest hockey players who is, I'll flick you this mic too, one of the greatest hockey players who has ever lived and one of the greatest ambassadors the game of hockey can ever have, Jean Béliveau, will be with us after the break. But without further ado, here's another song from Red Eye.
Stand by your side, lowest of the low, highest of the highs. Gonna pick you up when you're feeling kinda down. Share one smile, share one frown. And I don't think I can let you go. I don't think I can let you go. And I don't think I can let you go. Your face, your pretty face, it sets me free. Wish you could see yourself through your eyes the way I do. Then you know my dreams, all my dreams have come true. If I had to sit and watch the world end, would you be there holding my troubled times with troubled choices. Got to rely on love's inner voices. I don't think I can let you go. Well, I don't think I can let you go. Well, I don't think I can let you go. I don't think I can let you go.
Sad. Talking about sports. Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just me. CITR Sports. Please listen.
Team party tonight! Team party tonight!
Student made, student featured, UBC TV. Check out www.ubctv.ca. Originally conceived in 1990, UBC TV reinvented itself this past year with the launch of www.ubctv.ca. With support from UBC Rec and run by and for students, the site showcases student material ranging from films and music videos to sports, including the production of its own show, UBC Sports Desk. With the goal of getting students involved, UBC TV allows students to submit their content. Viewers have the added advantage of video on demand, allowing them to choose with ease exactly what they want to watch and when. UBC TV is recruiting staff for the next school year. Positions available are IT Director, Marketing Director, Program Director, Producer, Videographer, and Marketing Assistant. Anyone interested is requested to send an email to info@ubctv.ca or to log on to ubctv.ca for more details.
I want to be on your TV so that you might notice me.
CITR Podcast Update Number 1.
Work has begun on Canada's Information Highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. Without getting too technical, tell me how what you're working on is different from what's available to me right now.
So right now, if you want to listen to your favorite CITR program, you need to be listening to it on your radio live or streaming over the internet live. But with CITR Podcasts, you'll be able to download your favorite show and listen to it whenever you want, on your computer or on your MP3 player.
I'm just thinking about that.
I know, it's pretty rad.
For more information, visit CITR.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
And if you look into a book, you might just say, I had fun, just like Run, DMC and Jay.
Flash your friends of CITR card and get discounts at Lucky's Comics, RX Comics, Magpie Magazine, People's Co-op Bookstore, and Spartacus Books. Support CITR and pick up your card today.
CITR Podcast Update. Number 5.
Work has begun on Canada's Information Highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. As it comes more and more into our personal lives, how are we going to cope with the techno-peasants? I mean, this world, which was a fantasy for me 10 years ago, every 6 months becomes more a part of my own real life. You know, in the place where I do most of my writing, I now am just hooked into the world electronically, right, or yeah. would be if I could figure out how to make the bleep bleep modem work. But I'm technologically over my head already. The limit on me is not what you can do, it's what I can do.
I'm not sure you want to use your bleep bleep modem, or any modem for that matter, with receiving podcasts. But, just check out our website and I'm sure you'll figure it out.
For more information, visit CITR.ca/podcast.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. With us, without further ado, it is my honor and my privilege to have on the show one of the greatest players in the history of the National Hockey League, 14-time All-Stars, one of the greatest Montreal Canadiens who has ever lived, former captain Jean Béliveau. Jean, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for the invitation. You allow me to be able to speak with your listener.
Thank you very much. And so Jean Béliveau with us on the line right now. So Jean, first off, what are we doing nowadays? What are you up to?
I'm a very fortunate man. At my age, I still get so many invitations. The last 2 or 3 weeks, I've been on the go pretty good, pretty well. I'm going to have to slow down a little bit because I'm not 60 years old. I wish I'd be 60.
I'm sure you're doing great. And are you getting excited? You know, training camp, exhibition, I'm sorry, starts next week. Are you getting excited for the upcoming NHL season?
Well, as you probably know, the wife and I, we attend most of the game. The wife and myself, we really enjoy the game. And this coming Monday and Tuesday, the first 2 preseason games, we have Pittsburgh in town, so you can imagine with all their good young players that there's already excitement in the air.
Is Jean Béliveau, I'm sure you are, but how big of a fan are you over the young gun of the National Hockey League, Sidney Crosby? How much do you like this guy?
Well, he's the you have players like him once every 10 years, I would say. And I'm so happy when I see him and all those new youngsters joining the league. You know, they are a great asset for each of the franchise, but at the same time, a great asset for the league and for the game. So I hope that we have those good youngsters every year. Crosby, so far, is certainly in a class by himself. But it's great, those 2 preseason games, because of him and his good young teammates. The place is going to be full on this coming Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, John, I would actually like to bring something up with you. Is the National Hockey League, of course, they have this unbalanced schedule where an Eastern Conference team only comes to Vancouver every 3 years. I have my ticket. Saturday, December 8th, Sidney Crosby is coming to Vancouver. But this year, Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa will not even be playing Vancouver, Calgary, or Edmonton. What do you think of this unbalanced schedule?
Well, from a guy who played most of his career with 6 teams where we used to play each other 14 times. But what can you do today? I don't know. must be the same thing with some other sport. You have that in the NFL football for many years. Though it feels funny, you know, like us, last year we didn't see Detroit. I don't think we saw Colorado. And it's basically the same for everyone. But I'm thinking of the fans, and I'm sure that, well, like Pittsburgh, everybody wants to see them because don't forget they have Crosby and some very good youngsters. I don't think people mind too much when a very weak team doesn't play, doesn't visit Vancouver or Montreal during the year. But when you have a good team, the fans really missed it.
But shouldn't the Canadian teams at least be playing each other each year? Shouldn't, because that's something, even if Edmonton, even if Ottawa's a bad team, Vancouver still has interest in that game. Shouldn't they make it so at least Toronto's coming here every year, at the least every other year?
I've been out of the game for quite a few years. I think it will complicate those who are making the schedule.
Right.
Though I'm not so sure about that, but that's what goes through my mind, trying to find an answer to that. Don't forget, too, there's the traveling expenses. I'm sure that it's so expensive today to travel, you know, charter planes, and you go on a road for 10, 12 days, and hotels and meals. And so I suppose that maybe one day that somebody will come up with a new plan for the schedule that will please more people. But so far, there's no doubt I really enjoy and when I see a good team come to Montreal, but hope that they find a solution for this situation.
Jean Beliveau with us right now. Jean, are you a fan of the post-lockout NHL? I'm sorry. Are you a fan of the post-lockout NHL, the new form of hockey that they're playing now?
Oh, yeah. It's a good thing they changed it 2 years ago. The year after the lockout or the strike, I said publicly that what I was watching is not exactly the type of game that I enjoy playing, and I certainly didn't enjoy watching all this hooking, interference, stick interference, and so on. But the change that they made certainly helped the game. And it's a lot more interesting in the last 2 years, I personally feel, than what I was watching for too many years before the lockout. So I think the game is very interesting right now. It's a great game. It's a great game to play, but it could be a great game to watch.
Jean Beliveau, who was the greatest player that you played with in your day? Who was your greatest teammate?
Well, I came up at the right time. There's no doubt here in Quebec, since you're a young boy, Maurice was our idols. I remember 1945 when he scored 50 goals in 50 games. I think I had a lot of success when I had Geoffrion on right and Bert Olmsted on the left. And after that, Toblake asked me, he said, Jean, do you mind? I put all the youngster coming up with the team. I said, not at all. So that's why when Gilles Tremblay on left and Fergie, and I had Cournoyer and Bobby Rousseau and so on. And I used to tell those youngsters, don't change your game because of me. I said that I'm the centerman. I'm the oldest guy. It's up to me to adjust to your game. And I think we, working like that, we've been very, very successful as players and as a team. And the most important part to me was the success of the team. Your personal record comes second.
And you did pretty good. You guys won enough, and your personal record was good. So it worked out all around, didn't it?
Yeah, but that's what I thought.
Who was the greatest goaltender you went up against in your day?
Well, I've always thought there is no doubt that, like in 1967, we lost the Cup to Toronto. But two guys there, Terry Sawchuk and Johnny Bauer, really beat us in 67. Both are great goalie, but I have to include Glenn Howell. And in the after I retired, you have to include Patrick Roy. You know, before expansion, we had only one goalie and six teams, so it means only six goalie in the league, where today you got 30 teams, two or three goalie per team. But there's some good young goalie there coming up. And I'm always pleased with that because it's good for the game.
So what you're also telling us, though, is that you believe that since you retired, the best goaltender that you've seen was Patrick Roy.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
What did you like about Patrick Roy?
Well, I've always had the feeling that every time he stepped on the ice, that he was there to come out with a great game. I like, you know, he had this butterfly style, which didn't exist much in the 70 or 60 or 50. In my case, Glenn Howell was one of the rare ones. Terry Sawchuk was a stand-up goalie. But I like Patrick for his desire. He had all his heart in the game, working very hard. So you have to give him what he deserves.
Jean Béliveau with us right now. Mr. Béliveau, a couple more questions and I'll let you go. Fighting seems to be leaving the National Hockey League somewhat. Were you a fan of fighting because there was a lot of it in your day, or do you like the way they're sort of starting to phase it out now?
Well, I've never been a fan of fighting. Though, I have to admit that when there's a fight, all the people in the rink are standing up. But I think the way that they're handling things right now, the rules, I don't think they have as a goal to eliminate fighting. It's a tough game, but you're always going to have a few fights. But it's true. I think in the last year or two, it seems to be less fighting.
Did you feel, though, that in your day, here's my question, as a star player, because you hear some of the star players say this today, that they liked fighting because the tough guys could protect them from being roughed up. An example, did John Ferguson, was he a protector for you, and did that help you in your career?
I don't think I needed any protection, but I was glad to play with Fergie. You know, after we won the five Stanley Cup in a row, in, I would say, 1962-63, we were knocked out of the playoff early. And I think our team needed a couple of guys like Fergie. And that's when, in 1963, I believe, if my memory is right, Mr. Selke Sr., the general manager, went and got Ferguson and got on defense. Both came from Cleveland, and after that there were another trade for Lou Fontenato.
Right.
And I don't say that it's because of those trades but in 1965 we started to win again. You know, we won the Stanley Cup against Chicago, 66 against Detroit. We lost to Toronto in 67 because of Sawchuk and Bauer, and won again in 68-69 against St. Louis. I think today there, being a good skater has become more important in the last 2 years than drafting a big, strong guy. But if you have a big, strong guy and a fair skater, there's no doubt they're always going to have their place on the team.
John, thanks so much for doing this. One last question. Do you miss the Montreal Forum?
I miss the atmosphere. You know, before expansion, when we were six teams, each arena had their own characters. The old Chicago Stadium, Boston, the old Boston Garden, Maple Leaf Garden, New York, Madison Square, and the old Forum. But today, when you look at those big arena, and any organization, they need the revenue to pay those kind of salary. They're all the same. To me, it's not like before when each arena had their own characters. Though, I have to admit that each organization need those arena.
Yeah, it's too bad though, isn't it?
Well, in a way, you know.
Yeah.
You had every ice surface is the same where before Boston was a little shorter. Some arena corners where the angle were different. But today it's exactly the same everywhere.
Terrific. John Beliveau, John, thanks for doing this. I really do appreciate it, and enjoy the upcoming hockey season.
Oh, I'm certainly looking for it. And thank you again for allowing me to speak to your listener.
My pleasure. Thanks again. Okay, that was John Beliveau. I very much enjoyed that. We're going to be back with BJ Bash from Nevada, Las Vegas to talk a little National Football League. But before that, we got another tune with Red Eye.
Thanks, Daryl. Our management yelled at us for our last song, so we gotta pick it up a little bit here. So, here we go.
So we're gonna play something else
we've never
played live.
Another song we've never played live before.
Yeah. One, two, three, four.
our people let us sing the same song. Get it on through a microphone. We'll struggle on, we'll not be overthrown. We'll keep on hustling and bustling until the meat is blown. We'll keep on passing it right round until we show you how to know. You best be punching and kicking when we throw inside quicks. And we'll keep on dishing our licks. Next thing is way over your head. Throw your hands where you're screaming. Red eye, we got what you need. And resuscitating your breathing till we're driven off Babylon.
Thanks. We are Red Eye once again.
Shouts Darryl. Out, Darryl.
Shouts out, brother. Word. CITR. Yeah.
Shouts to Pete Uruguay.
Got Mike Chetlow Redman to my right. I'm Gabe Bobby Barbados Davis. And we got Eric Johnny Bahama Stevenson on the playing the sixth string.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be right back.
Keep
Stay tuned.
Definition for the word syndic. Noun. Informal. Definition 1. An elaborate or large dance, party, or other celebration. Definition 2. CITR's annual Battle of the Bands.
It's that time of year again. Shindig, CITR's annual Battle of the Bands. Come on down every Tuesday to hear Vancouver's best unsigned bands duke it out every week. Past contestants have included The Saltines, Clover Honey, Dandy Wind, They Shoot Horses, Don't They?, Victoria Victoria, and 3 Inches of Blood. Shindig promises killer prizes for the winners, entertainment for the viewers, and, as always, the dreaded jokes for beer.
Dogs are different than cats, and hey, what if Jack Nicholson were a flamberty blue?
Say, what if, We Are the World was sung by the cast of Friends? I think it might go something like this. All right,
Shindig kicks off on September 11th and continues for the following 8 Tuesdays at the Railway Club, located at 579 Dunsmuir Street. Doors open at 8 p.m. and show starts at 9:30. Shindig is brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
He levels the bat a couple of times. Shao kicks and he fires. Rose swing.
Turn it! Get out! Get out!
Winners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday, 4:30 to 6. And there was a reason I played that, There was a reason. With us on the line right now, BJ Bash from Nevada, Las Vegas. I mentioned Nevada, Las Vegas, and BJ, I'm sure you've seen this guy around town, is Pete Rose, this date, 1985, got the record-breaking hit against Ty Cobb. There's all that stuff. We all know he's been suspended from life from Major League Baseball. But my question is, have you seen Pete Rose around Las Vegas, and how's he doing nowadays?
Charlie Hustle?
Charlie Hustle. How's Charlie Hustle doing?
Yeah, Chuck Hustle's around here all the time. He actually does a lot of signings, and he's still bets, not obviously on baseball, at least not. I'm sure that the guy doesn't bet on baseball, but he'll play a lot of blackjack, and he's around town quite a bit. And his newest thing is he now autographs balls. Sorry, I bet on baseball, Pete Rose. Ongoing exploitation of his situation by the Hustle Man. I'm sorry, I bet on baseball. I mean, come on.
And he charges a premium for those balls, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, of course, absolutely. Daryl, as you know, in baseball circles, Pete is not. People always have looked unfavorably upon him because Hall of Fame weekend in Cooperstown, New York. He'll go and he'll set up shop, down the block from the Hall of Fame and charge for his autograph and really try and make the most of it out of it as he can and still try and make money. And listen, a guy's got to do what a guy's got to do to sustain himself. But, I think there's a certain level of class that he has crossed over. And I don't know, just, in my opinion, I think he may have found a more favorable approach from baseball had he not kind of gone after this all these years. I mean, that would be able to better answer that than me, but
Well, it's to the point, Beej. I mean, they busted him. They know what he did. They made a deal with him saying they wouldn't go public with it.
Hey, Bubba.
Oh, you want to talk to
Bubba?
This is Gabe Davis, BJ. We're stuck with him right now.
What's going on with Mr. Vagy?
Can you hear him, Beej? Talk into the mic, Gabe, properly.
Yeah.
Hey-o.
Pretend you're on stage.
He just sang. I had Red Eye in studio today for three songs.
Nice. Very cool. Very cool.
While B is on the air, I have to plug up.
Yeah, we're going to let them plug their band, okay, B?
Red Eye, www.myspace.com/redeye29records. Red Eye, R-E-D-E-Y-E, 29 records. That's all I have for you.
Speaking of Pete Rose and exploitation.
Yeah. At least I didn't gamble on this, though.
Do you sign baseballs? I'm with Red Eye at myspace.com.
No, I'm
Red Eye /29.
The only thing I have to do with baseball is getting my ass handed to me from the Mariners on my $40 bet when they go on a 16-game losing streak.
Thanks, Gabe.
Right in the pennant race, too. Very timely.
I'm never betting at the Treasure Island again.
All right, I'm out.
There you go. BJ, okay, we went on that. There, we'll do a plug for Red Eye again. I'll give you the MySpace page at the end of the show. BJ, we talked about Pete Rose. We talked about gambling. My point with Pete Rose is, before we move on, though, is that he'd be a lot more sympathetic of a figure if he had upfront admitted what he did, said I was wrong, and sort of been a little apologetic over the years, which he definitely wasn't. That's the problem there. So
sure, of course.
What are you going to do? All right, let's get on to the National Football League. BJ, you were 3 of 4 last week picking winners for us, weren't you?
I know. I did good. Huh? And the game I lost, St. Louis, Carolina, I mean, what can you do? But I mean, what a great opening weekend, huh? I mean, there was a 10-minute time span where Green Bay, Philly, Washington, Miami, and Buffalo, Denver all came down to final second or overtime field goals to win it within 7 minutes of each other, man. And then the Sunday night game and Monday. I mean, the NFL is back, baby.
BJ, key moments for you, though, on the weekend. I mean, I watched some pretty fun stuff. I thought last night had some very entertaining games, actually.
Yeah, last night was great. Kind of what stood out for me the most about last night, besides the fact that, I mean, if you're a cornerback in the NFL, how do you not know to slide onto a football? And, Eric Green for the Cardinals, I mean, that game's over if he falls on the ball properly. But, the crew for that second Monday night game of Mike Greenberg, Mike Golic, and Mike Ditka was unbelievable. They're better than the Monday night football crew. I mean, they're better than Kornheiser, Tirico, and Jaworski. I was blown away with how, going into it, I knew that they were going to be a great announcing crew, and Mike and Mike in the booth. I really, knew that it was going to be enjoyable, but I mean, that's a football fan's announcing team in the booth, and was just tremendously enjoyable and entertaining to listen to. And you know, Ditka in the booth was phenomenal.
I'm sad to say, I was outside. We were watching at a sports bar, and I couldn't really hear what they were saying too well. But I missed out.
And you know, Dad, the only reason I bring it up is because, you know, I'm a firm believer that you know, watching football on TV, the announcing team can impact the enjoyability. I know that's not a word, but it can impact the enjoyability of watching a game. And, you know, last night, listening to Tony Kornheiser, and I love Kornheiser, and, you know, pardon the interruption, and ESPN Radio, and the guy's phenomenal, has no place in a football booth, no place in a broadcast booth, and he brings this casual kind of, you know, just like joking around in the booth, and it just falls apart, man. I really enjoyed Mike and Mike in the booth.
Awesome.
That was one of my most enjoyable things of the weekend. And just, you know, seeing the NFL, there were so many games that came down to the bottom line and down to the last play or down to the last minute of the game. And you know, I think it was one of the most intense week ones that I can remember. And then obviously I think, you know, the biggest thing was all of the injuries and all of these guys who are out for the year, who had serious injuries, and you know, the impact of preseason football and four games that nobody plays in, and they finally come back out, and you know, you saw LaDainian Tomlinson and Larry Johnson and Steven Jackson and guys that had taken, you know, probably about four snaps in preseason combined, just come out really rusty and really slow. Those were kind of the things that stood out to me.
And Beej, I won my fantasy week and you didn't. Let's remember that one. John
yep.
Kitna, baby. John Kitna.
Yep.
Beej, let's talk about this week's game, though. The big time matchup, the fun one, Sunday night football. It's not the Monday nighter. San Diego at New England. What a matchup that is.
Yeah, that's going to be a great game. And listen, I'm going to say it right now. You know, it's very obvious that this is probably the favorite matchup. Going into the AFC Finals, you know, 20 weeks from now, to see who's going to get into the Super Bowl. These are the two best teams in the AFC. We saw that again this week. We knew it going into Week One, but we really saw them establish themselves. The best possible thing that could happen for San Diego in this game is that they lose. Because I can tell you one thing, if San Diego goes into Foxborough in Week 2 and beats New England, they will not beat them in the playoffs no matter where they play. Because New England is they're a serious team and they're a proud team, and the dynasty and Belichick and everything that they do so well, one of those things is revenge games. And they don't forget things very easily, and they take things very personally. And I'm telling you, if San Diego goes into Foxborough and wins, it's not something New England will forget. The best thing that can happen for San Diego, if they want to go to the Super Bowl, is if they happen to lose this game and take even more, you know, take even more into it when they face each other down the line. Do you agree?
Not really, actually. Not
I
really.
Don't think that there's any chance that San Diego can beat New England twice in a season.
I guess so. Beej, I really like San Diego. New England's been on top for a while, but man, did New England ever do it in Week 1 against the Jets. Randy Moss, what was it, 9 catches for 183 yards? I mean, if they get him going, if Randy Moss is going to turn out to be an all-pro receiver again with New England, that's tough.
I don't think that we're going to see weeks like that continuously through the season from Randy Moss. I think that Randy Moss will continue to have a major impact on that team, but I don't think we're going to see weeks like this all the way through the season. What New England does is New England plays team football, and no player is bigger than the team. And you know, I mean, Tom Brady, you know, this guy really has to be right up there with, you know, like the Joe Montanas and the Steve Youngs and you know, the great, out of all the great quarterbacks that I've seen in my time, I mean, he has to be right up there with them. The guy's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. I'll give you that
one. What do you give me that
I'll give
one?
You,
look,
well,
what the, look what the guy's record is
no.
as a starting quarterback in the NFL. The guy doesn't lose games, and he goes out in week one against a division rival in the Jets, yet alone the whole Belichick-Mangini hatred between these two teams, and throws like 24 for 29 for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. Yeah, pretty pedestrian day.
I'll take San Diego and New England. Who are you taking?
I'm going to take, and we're talking with betting and a line here and San Diego taking 3 on the road.
Yeah.
That's so tough. I'm taking New England.
Okay.
Because you know why? Because I think San Diego is going to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. And like I said, they ain't going to beat them twice. I think they lose again. And when they face each other down the road, they take this loss and the loss from the playoffs last year, and they really come out and say, you know what? It's time we beat these guys. And that's what you saw Indianapolis do. You saw them come out and say, it's time we beat these guys. And they did it. And that I think the same thing is going to happen.
Perfect. BJ, I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, so help me out here. I just want to go through 4 games, and we'll both pick our winners here. Washington at Philadelphia, Monday Night Football.
Well, and I'm not saying this because I know that you are a diehard Eagles fan, but if you're a Philly fan, I mean, you got to be hurting today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you're on Monday.
You know what?
I mean,
you know what it is, Beach? I'll tell you what it is I am actually very worried right now. Their defense, which was just – You had them in the pool all those years when they were one of the top defenses in football. I mean, they used to be a dominating defense. And to be perfectly honest, I am very worried about Donovan McNabb right now. He could still be injured. He's apparently wearing a really bad brace. I mean, to not get it done against what people are calling a very improved Green Bay defense, give me a break. His numbers were not good at all. Their offense couldn't move it, and it's a little worrisome because even before he got hurt last year, they were struggling with him at the quarterback position.
Well, and even more surprising because of how good he looked in the preseason. I mean, he went out 7 for 7 and 100 yards in one game, and it was a lot of talk that McNabb was back. I think that the Green Bay defense is much improved. I think that you're good. I think that they finally are going in the right direction in Green Bay. And so, it was a very close game. But listen, what lost the game for Philly wasn't Donovan McNabb. I mean, what is this guy doing? J.R. Reed, he runs up, waits for a fair catch, runs up 15 yards to inexplicably try and field a punt with less than a minute left in the game. Obviously, he can't get there in time, fumbles the ball, and Green Bay wins the game. I mean, it was the second fumble on punts for Philly that game. The other one with Greg Lewis in the first quarter. But the most ironic thing is that Jeremy Bloom, who was a great athlete at the University of Colorado, especially at returning punts and kickoffs, was just released by Philly, and now they have to go out and find somebody who's going to return punts for these guys. I mean, Philly blew the game; they had it won. And they blew it.
What's the spread in this one, Washington at Philly?
7 points. I'm going with Philly. I didn't see anything out of Washington that really, excited me all that much. Clinton Portis was running the ball. He ran the ball pretty well. I think Philly comes back at home on Sunday night and does some good stuff. I think Philly wins. I think they'll cover the spread.
All right, I'm going for doozy because one of these teams is going to be 2-0, Houston at Carolina.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's funny. I was actually discussing this game with one of my associates earlier today, and I think that Houston is much improved. I think Matt Schaub is a great quarterback and is going to have success there in Houston. However, I want to see them do something against a team other than Kansas City, which proved that they are going to be terrible this year, before I start giving them more confidence, and the fact that I'm going to give up probably less than a touchdown at home with Carolina, I'm going to take Carolina.
I'm with you. Jake DeLome, 3 touchdowns the other day in their win versus St. Louis. I'll take Carolina.
I think Houston is going to be good this year. I think Houston is going to surprise some people.
Well, it's a big game for them because they got to host Indy next week. So, this is a big game, though. If they can pull this one out, look out, I guess. Final game, BJ. It's really tough. Definitely not as tight matchups this week as last week. I want to know the spread on this one, and let's take this one. You mentioned them. They look terrible. I just want to throw this one, see what we can come up with. Kansas City at Chicago.
You know, you're right. It's definitely some looser games this week than last week. As of right now, I see 12 points on the board for Chicago. However, it is you are seeing it go up as high as 13.5. I definitely think it's going to be two touchdowns by the time that the game goes off. Having watched Chicago this week, and listen, I mean, when I told you San Diego was the bet of the week, it wasn't. Listen, the game was a little bit closer than you would have liked to have seen just because, Chicago's defense is phenomenal. LT was really rusty. That was really obvious. And, if he doesn't throw that touchdown, maybe they don't cover the spread. Rex Grossman is a joke. Cedric Benson obviously isn't the answer at running back. I couldn't be happier. The offensive side of the ball in Chicago is going to be a disaster all year round. And then they lose Mike Brown again for what, like the third year out of four seasons? They lose their starting safety, Mike Brown.
And I can't remember his name. They lost their starting defensive tackle also.
Yeah, Chicago's starting to get a little banged up. I don't know, man. I'm not going to bet that game because there's no way that I'm going to confidently say, I'm going to win by two touchdowns with Rex Grossman and Cedric Benson as on offense. But at the same time, Kansas City really did not look good. It's kind of strange because, not that much changed there. But where it changed was on the offensive line. And you always hear guys say that, the offensive line is the most boring part of any football team. But that's the foundation, man. That's where, it's the building blocks. And that's what you have to have before you can be successful. It just went to show that you lose two members of your offensive line, and all of a sudden they can't get it done. I think Larry Johnson will have a better game. I think Kansas City will play better than they did last week. But at the same time, I don't really want to bet them. But if you're making me choose and I'm getting two touchdowns, I'll take Kansas City.
I will take Chicago. I watched a lot of that Kansas City Chiefs Hard Knocks before the season starts. And, I'm going with Chicago.
Now, I can tell you there are some games that I do like on the sheet this week. Right now, New Orleans is only giving up 3 to Tampa Bay going into Tampa Bay. I don't think Tampa's going to be great. I don't think they're going to be terrible. I think they're going to be really mediocre this year, probably about a 6-7 win team. I think New Orleans only giving up a field goal, having an extra long week. They played on Thursday. They got beat. They got to sit there and think about it for, 10 days, about how they just got spanked. I think they're going to come out and show some more of what they did last year. I think they're going to come with some really kind of interesting stuff. Reggie Bush, some new looks, some different things that Tampa Bay has seen. I think that New Orleans is an easy cover. I think the biggest question going into next week is, are the New York Giants going to be able to field a team? I mean, they have lost so many guys to injury. They were losing guys in the preseason. Now they come out, they lose Uminara, they lose Brandon Jacobs. Eli Manning is hurting. I can tell you one thing. Green Bay on the road is not someone that you're going to make a history of betting on. But if Jared Lorenzen is starting at quarterback for the Giants, and now there's talk that they're going to go out and they're going to try and get someone else to come in, and in case Eli's injury is a little bit worse than they first say, I'm taking Green Bay. I think Green Bay came out with a really gutty performance. Listen, it was Brett Favre at home on opening day, possibly his last opening day in Lambeau, it was a really gutty win. They did what they needed to do to win, and that's the kind of stuff that you build on, and that's the kind of stuff that you take. You take things from victories like that and you put them into practice, and I think Green Bay is going to take care of the Giants this year on the road, and all of a sudden the Packers could be 2-0. Who knew? And it's funny, you look at the NFC Central and the black and blue division, and that people thought the Bears were going to run away with, and who'll finish second. The Bears are in last place. All three of those, the Vikings, the Lions, and Green Bay are all 1-0, and the Bears are 0-1. So who knows? It just goes to show parity in the NFL.
Awesome. Beej, one last question. Thanks for doing this. Were you at the MTV Music Awards?
I was not.
Oh, why?
I don't know. Going to award shows isn't really something that strikes me as all that much entertaining. You got to sit there during commercial breaks, and you know there's seat fillers and this and they. You know, I'd rather go to one of the, you know. Listen, there's a lot of parties and a lot of stuff going on this weekend in Vegas that the VMAs was. You know, contained to 3 hours inside the Pearl at the Palms, you know, their new venue there. But it was an entire weekend in Vegas, and there was a lot of other stuff that was a lot more enjoyable and entertaining and alluring to me than going to sit watch an award show. I went to the Billboard Music Awards a couple of years ago, and it was just really boring. And I kind of told myself I wasn't going to do it again.
So you got your fill. You got your fill this weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Attaboy. BJ Bash from Nevada, Las Vegas. Beach, talk to you soon.
Absolutely, thanks.
All right, we're going to take a break. I'm going to play a Red Eye song, and I hope he's there because I'm late calling him, Julio Caravada. We'll be right back with Julio Caravada, talk about the BC Lions. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CATR Radio, and I am doing the show today. I banged my head on a cupboard at about 3 o'clock. And I was bleeding out of my head. I got a Band-Aid on, and a trainer for the UBC Thunder men's basketball team actually cleaned it up, put a little alcohol on it, put a little Band-Aid on it. And, I feel like lying down. Okay, we'll be right back after this. You are listening to 101.9 FM.
Gotta keep on living and I fight a good fight. Loving all around, telling me everything gonna be alright. So kick back, relax your mind and sing. West Coast living is a beautiful thing. Sing West Coast living is a beautiful thing. West Coast living is a beautiful thing. I sing West Coast living is a beautiful thing. West Coast living is a beautiful thing. Shall I cut myself some slack?
Yo, kids!
I keep coming back. So, fellas, bob your heads, don't you go real close. This next one be kicking in. Everybody knows if you follow me, but don't lose your grip. Suck another one back. This shit's a trip. I'm feeling pretty good tonight. And I'm feeling pretty good despite. West Coast living is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. A West Coast living is a beautiful thing. A West Coast living is a beautiful thing.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Winners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. With us on the line right now, Julio, I didn't forget about you. I apologize I'm late.
That's okay, Daryl, no worries.
It's been, you know what happened? At 3 o'clock, here at CITR, the program manager, Lydia Massimola, I was trying to, they gave me a recording device. And I got up to go about and do my thing, and I banged my head on the cupboard, which was left open, and I was bleeding out of my head. I'm telling you, this is about 3 o'clock, and I've been a little woozy ever since. I'm just a little disoriented.
Are you not going on the IR, are you?
No, Joe, I'm still here.
You're toughing it out.
I'm still here. I play. No, nice. I'm not like these pro athletes that, you know, they get, a concussion and sit out. No, it's quite horrible. You ever have a concussion, Julio?
Yes, I've had about three or five, I think four. I think, you know what I mean, what I remember. I know I've had three for sure.
They're as bad as we hear?
Well, you know what I mean, they're just like, you know, they're the kinds of things that, you know, at the time you just think that you get your bell rung.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't know. You mean, as far as what, there's way more attention being put on it now. So, you know, I mean, who knows how many you really would have had if you consider what they do now. But, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, I think even now, like, I think I have little episodes where you get a little dizzy at times and you kind of do something and you find yourself a little woozy. But I'm sure it's all stems from those kinds of hits it took as a kid.
That's why you act like you do.
Yeah. It's all coming to light now, isn't it, Daryl?
Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network with us. You know, Julio, I was golfing on Sunday, okay? And I hit the turn, and it was late in the second quarter, and BC was up 10-3 over Montreal. And then I find out at the end they lost 32-14.
What happened
there?
Well, I don't know. You mean, Daryl, you mean, the score I think is a little bit deceiving because, you know, I think the Lions had some, you know, had a couple of, you know, turnovers that probably shouldn't have been turnovers. You know, you look back at, I look at an interception that was thrown by Jarius Jackson, went right through the hands of G-Roy Simon. And, you know, there was one that was a fumble by Jarius Jackson that was a close call. So, you know, I mean, it was just, you know what, Daryl, it was one of those games where BC, you know, didn't play that poorly. I thought that Jarius Jackson played very, very well. I thought, you know, defensively they, you know, did an okay job. But they just couldn't get a break, you know what I mean? And it was Montreal that was getting all the breaks. Just to give you an example, late in the game, where BC was still in the game, and, you know, Marcus Brady threw a ball that should have been intercepted by Ryan Phillips. And actually, if Ryan Phillips catches the interception, I think he probably is going to go for a touchdown. Instead, the ball goes through his hands, tips up to Kerry Watkins, who then catches it for a first down. You know what I mean? It was just one of those days. So, you know, I think Wally Buono, you know, I mean, it's something that, you know, we talked to him after the game about, and he was disappointed, but he also said, you know, it's just one of those games. You just couldn't put your finger on anything, but it's just one of those days.
Joe, is it also with the BC Lions, or, you know, this is a team that has hosted the last three Western Conference finals, and although they don't have, you know, the illustrious history like, say, the Edmonton Eskimos do, recent history, this has been a dominant team in the CFL the last 3 years, defending Grey Cup champions, and they just don't seem to be firing like they were this year.
Well, yeah, no, that's very, very true. And I think what happens too, Daryl, is like what we saw last year, I think, was one of those things that it's one of those magical seasons that where everything goes your way and, you know, you don't suffer any major injuries and you're just able to, it was just all clicking all at the same time. And I think this year, you know, you look at the injuries and I think the injuries have probably been the biggest, you know, factor in all this. It just seems like it's one of those years. But, you know, you look at the teams all across the league, and it seems like everybody's suffering those injuries. And, you know, you look at the Lions and the situation they have a quarterback with two of their, you know, their number one and number two quarterback are both out, and they're able still to be at 6-3-1. You know, that's still a very, very good record. You look at Toronto, they were 0-6 without Michael Bishop, and now they're, you know, what are they? They're
4-6.
You know, with,
four,
yeah, so, yeah. They're 4-0 with him. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And I think it's going to be an indication of probably the season in the CFL this year is that who is going to be able to persevere and who's going to be able to survive the injury bug and in the end, because, you know, I look at all three teams in the West, like, and Edmonton, I think, you know, is digging themselves into a bigger hole. But I just look at, like, you know, say Saskatchewan, BC, and Calgary. You know, you look at any one of those teams, and on any given day, you know, anybody can beat anybody. So it's going to be, you know, very, very interesting coming down the stretch here.
Yeah, Joe, one question about Saskatchewan I want to ask you. BC barely trailing them in the Western Conference right now. Matt Dominguez, I'm reading that his knee is banged up, and they're pretty concerned about that. How big of a loss would that be for them? Because he's quite a key player for that football team.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And it's one of those things, too, where, you know, they're now, you know, they've suffered some injuries, too. But, you know, you look at what would happen if Kerry Joseph were to go down, you know, and now Matt Dominguez goes down. And that's a big blow to them. And they're going to have to find someone to step up. And again, I think it's going to be a year where the team that is able to persevere and a team that's able to overcome the injuries is going to be the team that wins. So, you know, Matt Dominguez, they say, is going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what impact that is on the team and how Saskatchewan's able to survive this for the next 3 or 4 weeks, because, you know, this is a big, big part of the year right now, and everybody who's been in the CFL or been around the CFL realizes that you've got to get it cranked up at this time of the year, because you want to be going full steam ahead come playoff time. You don't want to be struggling.
Friday night. So, wait a minute.
Saturday night.
Yeah. See, it's the knock, Julio.
What's that? It's the blow to the head.
Because I was just thinking, if it's Friday, I got, you know, it's Rosh Hashanah coming up here.
Yes.
You know, but I think that's Wednesday and Thursday. I got to regroup.
Yeah,
I gotta regroup here. Anyways, Julio, Saturday night, Toronto's coming. So just so you know, the Jewish high holidays will be over. I will be there for you on Saturday.
Thank you. You just don't know how reassuring that is for me. You are like my security blanket.
I am aware of this. I know this. Toronto coming to town, Julio, 4-6, but you just said it. They have won their last 4 football games. So this is going to be a tough matchup for the Lions this weekend.
Well, it's going to be a very, very tough matchup, because traditionally Toronto, especially defensively, they give the Lions all that they can handle. And Rich Stubler, the defensive coordinator for the Argos, always does a tremendous job. They're a veteran group. They're very, very well coached, and they always play the Lions tough. And it's going to be one of those games where, you know, it seems like who makes the least amount of mistakes, because anybody who makes mistakes, it's probably going to cost you, because both these defenses are pretty stingy and they don't give up very many plays. And although the run defense against the Alouettes wasn't very good, I think that, you know, Toronto's not traditionally a run team. And I think that with Michael Bishop there, that he's going to be the, you know, I mean, they're going to have to avoid the big play, because with Michael, he's one of those guys that, you know, when he gets out of, when the play breaks down, he's able to get on the edge and make something happen. He's very, very dangerous. But he's one of those guys that if you make him stand in there and deliver the ball, you know, he can make some mistakes. So it's going to be a very, very difficult game. They always play the Lions tough, and I know that, you know, the Lions realize that.
I guess, Julio, we've hit the point with the BC Lions where, you know, the last couple of years some teams would come in until the falling apart of 2 years ago at the end of the season. Teams used to come into BC and you'd just be waiting for that blowout. And, you know, blowouts can be a little boring. These are going to be anybody's games down the stretch here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I mean, that's the way it should be, right? You know, it's that time of the year, and I think you've talked to any of the players, really, they kind of, you know, go through the motions in that first part of the year, and then after Labor Day, everyone realizes that, you know, things got to start getting cranked up. And I think Toronto, too, you know, they lost the first game of the year to the Argonauts, to the Lions. You know, they want to come in here and beat the Lions, I think, for their own psyche, just like the Alouettes needed to beat the Lions. I'm sure that they're going to be pumping that to their players this week, that, you know, that the Lions are the defending Grey Cup champions and they haven't played well against them, and to, you know, put it all together. And so you're going to see your best effort from the Argonauts. They feel that, you know, with Michael Bishop now, they come in, you know, at full strength, and you know, they're going to have to come a long ways. And I know Wally's going to, you know, have his guys fired up, because I know that the importance of every game now going down the stretch, and with Saskatchewan losing last week, they're going to have to get back into it. They've got a chance now to keep pace with Saskatchewan. So you know that Wally's been preaching that, and that it's going to be a very, very intense game. They always are.
Awesome. Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network, BC and Toronto going at it on Saturday. Julio, were you a John Beliveau fan? I know he was before your day, but you a John Beliveau fan?
Well, I always liked him, but I was a Leaf fan, right? So, you know, I mean, he played in the Habs, so I was, you know, anything that was the Habs, I was anti.
He was on the show. I had him on the show today.
You did?
Yeah, John Beliveau.
Right on.
Nice
guy.
I mean,
you're always getting the guests, aren't you?
Well, have you seen the movie Superbad?
Yeah, I have. I saw it this weekend. I loved it.
Okay, I had McLovin on last week, you know.
You had McLovin on?
Damn straight.
Right on. Well, you're good buddies with Seth Rogen, aren't you?
You haven't seen him on, heard them on any of the other stations in town, have you?
No. Have you had Seth on there?
Seth is, he couldn't come on today, but what I'm doing with Seth is I'm going to try to get him on the week, he's going to be the opening host for Saturday Night Live this year.
Oh, right on.
And I'm going to try to have him on the week right after that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, you've got the inside track. Yeah, no, Rick and I went and saw it on the road this week in Montreal, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, you see Rick trying to get him to get me on, hey? You see me go all silent.
Well, it pays those child. You should have been in on that screenplay.
What screenplay? What?
The Superbad.
Oh, no. I'm really good friends, okay? One of my really good friends is the guy who drew the penises. That's one of my really good friends, Dave Goldberg, and Evan Goldberg, who is the writer and who
was that his brother?
Yeah, and Evan is. I know Evan very well too. Evan and I went to a Dodger game when I was in LA. He came on the show last week also.
So the guy who played Evan in the film.
No, not Michael Cera. The real Evan Goldberg.
The real Evan.
He was the co-writer and executive producer with Seth. He's the guy I know pretty well.
Wow.
Yeah, him and McLovin were on the show last week. Here was McLovin's, it was the first day of school last week. I'll just play this for you, Julia, because I'm going to end the show with it.
Give me a little bit. Give me a little bit.
Here was McLovin's advice to people, okay?
What would McLovin be doing on his first day of school right now, first day of university?
Sleeping in every class I go to.
Okay. Does McLovin have a message for everybody on the first day of school?
Yeah, just don't really try because it's really not that important. School, I think you should cheat off your friends and ditch class as much as you want to, and drink every night and have a party every day.
You agree with that, Julio?
I can't say I agree with it, but that's kind of wishful thinking, isn't it?
It's good radio, though, hey?
It is. It's very good radio. Yes, it is. But I got a kick out of that show. I tell you, I laughed, and now I haven't seen Knocked Up yet.
Okay, not as good.
I really liked Superbad. It was very, very funny, and so, I think any kid who, I think what's funny about that stuff is that every single kid that saw it or sees it can picture themselves.
They did me a favor there last week, hey?
Did they?
Getting me those guys, hey? They did me a favor there, no?
Well, you know what? That's all part of being friends, though. It's not a favor.
They got me McLovin. I don't know McLovin here. I don't know Christopher Mintz-Plasse. He was in Glasgow, and he gave me the interview.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Holy. You know what? You're connected. You're connected. That's awesome.
It was fun. I had a big kick of it. I had a big kick out of it.
Yeah, no, I really, really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was hilarious.
So just so you know, when Rick kind of hints to me again, so you guys just saw it. If you kind of...
Well, you know what? Well, maybe you should try to get some of these guys to the game and get them at halftime.
Julio, I'm a CITR guy, remember, on air.
You're a piece of work.
Thank you, Julio.
Okay, Daryl, take care of yourself.
Julio, man. I will see you on Saturday. And for you, anything. I'll leave it at that.
Thanks,
I'll tell you what. If we ever get the halftime interview with these guys, if I can ever arrange it, Julio Caravata, and only Julio Caravata, is doing the interview.
Oh, yeah, right. I just want the picture.
What?
I just want the picture. I just want a picture. That's all.
Talk to you soon, Julio. I'll see you on Saturday.
Darryl. Okay. See you. Take care, buddy.
All right. That was Julio Caravata. And I have a bump on my head today. You see this? You see this couch I have here? The band you're hearing all day, Red Eye, Here's their MySpace page. They're great guys. MySpace.com/RedEye, R-E-D-E-Y-E, 29 Records. So that's MySpace.com/RedEye, 29 Records. And I got to get off because Eric's here. So I'm going to play a Red Eye song, but Eric will probably.
Mike's here.
Mike. See? It's a bump. No, you really got to give me. I did it at like 3 o'clock. That's the thing. And I was actually bleeding out of my head and everything. So Mike with Flexure Head is coming up right now. I got to go to some CITR meeting. Boy, you're lucky you get out of these. They're always on Tuesday.
I know, 6 o'clock.
And you get out of them. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody. I'd like to thank my guests, Red Eye, Don Wells, Ted Gavaya, Julio Caravata, BJ Bass, and, of course, the star of our show today. Awesome to have him on. Hope you enjoyed the interview. I wish I could do it without a bump on my head, but nonetheless, Jean Beliveau, Mike, I don't know if you know, was on the show today. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Rocks we walk when they fall.